talking to me?
Funny, like I'm a clown, I usually.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. Today is Monday, February 15th. And what's going on, guys?
It's a three-day holiday.
Yeah. Well, like almost a four-day one.
Yeah,
with the,
four-day for my
kids. Exactly.
Yeah.
Kids,
right. Yeah. Well, you guys are all stuffed on the chocolates from the little Whitman samplers and everything.
We had movies for foodies last night.
Oh, that's okay. That I'd forgotten about that. What was it last night?
It was Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, and have a good crowd for it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a whole subplot in there about pastry. I hope there was some tasty pastries last night.
He recreated the pastry that they serve in prison, remember?
Oh, yeah. You know,
get me my throat slitter. and he cuts through the pastry and shares it with the prisoners. Chef Steve recreated that pastry. It was pretty awesome.
That looked pretty tasty.
Yeah. So that was a great movie. And it was a great time. Let's see. Let's talk about the top 10. How did that new Michael Moore movie do? Was that number one?
No. But it did pretty well. Variety had some numbers on it. In limited release, it did, you know.
Yeah, I was surprised it's in two theaters here in town, that both of the Landmark theaters have it. But
It's what we predicted last week.
Yeah.
Deadpool.
Here's the top 12 domestic weekend box office estimates from comscore.com. Number one, Deadpool. Deadpool smashed box office records over the three-day holiday weekend, bringing in an estimated $135 million.
Holy cats. We were thinking it was like $40 million, but oh, my goodness.
I mean, some estimates had it $100 million, but nobody.
That's U.S., $137
million. That's $135
million. Oh, my
so,
goodness.
Along with the overseas total of $125 million, the film from 20th Century Fox looks to have a $260 million.
It's the Guardians of the Galaxy of this year.
Weekend. Oh. Oh my
gosh. So it's made back its money already.
Even with all the Northeast, the Midwest, cold, snow, icky, you know, everyone hunkering down, people still went out and found Deadpool. Starring Ryan Reynolds and based upon Marvel Comics' most unconventional antihero, Deadpool tells the origin story of former Special Forces operative turned mercenary Wade Wilson, who after being subjected to a rogue experiment that leads him with accelerated healing powers, adopts the alter ego Deadpool. This easily surpasses the previous President's Day weekend and February record holder 50 Shades of Grey, which set a high water mark with its 85.2 million debut last year. This according to Variety. It also stands at the biggest ever bow for a R-rated movie, sailing past The Matrix Reloaded, $91.8 million launch.
I'm wondering how many kids were in there that actually paid for another movie and then went into
Deadpool. You know, people were
so it could have made a lot more than that.
Probably.
You know how many people, I bet how many parents regretted taking their kids to
I've got a friend of mine that's his son just turned 13 and the son is just begging to go see it.
Well, 13 is probably okay.
Yeah, but you know, I was reading on Facebook a guy complaining he went to see the Academy Award winning shorts and he said it was fine. There's not weren't many people in the theater. Everybody was bringing their 3 and 4 year olds to see Deadpool.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my, that's way too young.
Yeah.
People here, they see Marvel, they see, you know, superhero, and they go, hey.
Well, there was an interesting, speaking of Facebook, there was an interesting bit of marketing this weekend. I guess Fox put out a letter supposedly from Deadpool himself pleading with parents, saying, Captain America will be out in a couple of months. Don't take your kids to this because we want to do another one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I think they could do 2 or 3 more probably.
I'm sure they will money.
Sure they've already greenlit the sequel.
The parents of the 3 and 4 year olds also were taking their little people into the number 2 movie of the week, Kung Fu Panda 3 from 20th Century Fox. It added 19.6 million to its already 100.3 million haul. Number 3 was How to Be Single. That played at 3,300 theaters, bringing in 18.8 million in its debut weekend.
3,300, you say? Oh,
33, yeah. That's, Warner Brothers.
That's not a lot.
Mm-hmm. Number 4 was Zoolander 2. The Ben Stiller directed starring film sequel brought in 15.7 million. Right now, as of last night, it standed at 23% at Rotten Tomatoes, playing at 3,300 locations.
It's much higher than it deserves.
22%?
23% at Rotten Tomatoes, yeah.
It may have gone down since I last looked.
Did you see it?
Oh, yes. We both endured it.
Yeah.
I liked it.
We were tougher than Leonard Maltin.
It was awful.
Did you hear about Leonard Maltin this weekend?
I did.
He admitted that this was like a first film he's walked out on.
The first movie he's ever walked out on in his life.
That he was supposed to be reviewing. Yeah.
One of our contributors, Kate Marquis, who did the review, she almost walked out like three times. It was awful. It's god awful.
Yes. We'll talk more about that later.
Exactly. At number five is The Revenant from 20th Century Fox. That brought in another $6.9 million with all the Oscar award season buzz. It has grossed $160.4 million since its opening in December. That's amazing.
Yeah, for such an art house type film.
It did
really
well
surprising.
At the BAFTAs this weekend. The cinematographers also gave Lubieski their top honors also.
Oh, yes.
Number six, Hail Caesar, brought another $6.6
million. Hell yeah. I'm surprised that's still doing as well as it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it would be out of the top 10, but it's further down at the top 10 at least.
Number seven, still in the 10, Star Wars: The Force Awakens, brought in $6.2 million, adding to its $2.00 billion.
So it's maybe at $2.13 billion
right
now.
You're
right.
Disney also, on a related note, Disney also sent out the press release today that Star Wars Episode 8, Untitled, has started shooting today. So we will be seeing that.
But what's the title?
Untitled.
Yeah. Oh, there. That'll be a big deal when they release what the title of it.
Exactly.
It's like it was with the last one. That's for certain.
So. John Boyega was talking about starting production. He had to get to work during the BAFTA red carpet last night. And number eight, Jim's favorite, The Choice.
Well, you were curious that the Valentine's Day holiday would bring it a big bump, but not really.
Not really. 5.2 million. Ride Along 2, 4.1 million. It's made over 100 million. Globally, U.S., overseas, so it's still doing pretty well. And number 10 is The Boy, the horror film that both Tom and I really liked. That brought in another $2.9 million.
Well, it's about 4 weeks it's been out, so that's pretty good.
That's really, I'm glad it's doing well. At number 11, The Finest Hours from Disney, that brought in $2.9 million. And rounding out the 12 is The Fifth Wave with $2.7 million. And that's it.
Still floating about as the
Fifth Wave. And this weekend, what do we got? The Witch, that's not going to make much of an impact. Race, I don't know if that'll do particularly well either.
Yeah, they're hitting the TV ads pretty good.
Yeah, Risen. You know, the Christians will be out for Risen. Uh-huh. So that should do pretty well.
I'm surprised they're not releasing that more towards the end of
Easter.
End of March.
All right, let's get started. We got lots of movies to review.
Yes.
Five to be exact. Let's start with How to Be Single. Jim, you reviewed How to Be Single at our website, WeAreMovieGeeks.com. How many stars did you give it?
I think 2.5, maybe 3 at the
most. You're
kind
of up the middle on it.
You're a pretty girl. This is New York City. There's like a billion people outside that door.
In every male-female friendship, there's total number of drinks.
4, 5.
And if you hit that, it means you would definitely have sex.
If I had more than 5 drinks, I'd hook up with you.
My drink number is 27. I wouldn't even touch myself on less than 24.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a sluggish film. I accuse the producers of doing a bait and switch because from the ads and the commercials, you would think that the wild Rebel Wilson is the star of it, but she's really not. The star is actually Dakota Johnson. By the title, you might think it's harkens back to sort of the fun anthology type films like A Guide for the Married Man, in which Matthau is teaching Robert Morse the ways of infidelity. But no, it's more of a straightforward story. It's actually closer probably to the Sex and the City TV show and the movies. And of course, they do reference that in the film. The opening scene starts with Rebel Wilson, he immediately goes to Dakota Johnson's story. When we first meet her, she's just starting college, and she meets her boyfriend Josh, and it's a meet cute thing in the hallway. They're pretty much a couple until the last days of college, when she announces to him that she's going to be going to New York City to start as a paralegal in a law firm, and they should take a relationship break. And
does she say, what's a butt plug?
No.
That was her last
one. No, that's that other film that she was in last year. Yeah, none of that in this one.
Okay.
So,
but is it rated R or is it PG-13?
I'm thinking it's R. I should have looked at it.
Does Miss Dakota Johnson take her clothes off?
No.
Okay, well, I'm not going to bother saying it.
There's no nudity in it, as far as I recall. Yeah. So she moves to New York. She shares an apartment with her older sister, Meg, played by Leslie Mann, who is an obstetrician. She has a subplot. She suddenly develops baby fever and decides that she's wants to have a child, and she's searching around for a donor. And once she does get hooked up, she stumbles across Jake Lacey as this young man that's I guess has an interest in the more mature ladies. Yeah,
Jake loved the Coopers, Lacey.
Yes, yes. And in my review, I said he's one of the brightest spots in the film, much like he was in Love the Coopers. He's got to find a
good script. But I wasn't saying much for Love the Coopers.
No, but he's got to get a good script. Yeah. He could be a big star. There's a nice article on him or profile of him in this week's Entertainment Weekly. And he's saved a couple of movies. Mm-hmm. But you've got that subplot. At the law firm that Dakota Johnson's Alice works at, she meets Robin, played by Rebel Wilson, and she's a wild lady, and she's the center of attention at all these clubs and parties and pubs and all that. And she says, well, you need a palate cleanser after being with Josh for so long. And that introduces them to the bartender character, and I'm blanking on his name now, right now, played by Anders Holm, who's sort of doing a younger riff on the Ted Danson character from Cheers, Sam Mayday Malone, which introduces another subplot. Upstairs from the bar where Anders Holm works, Lucy is having trouble with her Wi-Fi. Lucy is played by the gorgeous Alison Brie, and she goes down to the bar to use the Wi-Fi, and of course there's a Sam and Diane banter, like as from Cheers, between Anders Holm and Alison Brie, but nothing really happens with that. Much like Sleeping with Other People last year, Alison is saddled with this really uninteresting character. She's super focused on fighting a guy, and she's hitting all the dating sites, so that's the other subplot. You're thinking, well, the guy's right in front of you, you should be with, and they're just kind of spinning their wheels with that subplot. But it's all about Dakota sort of navigating the singles life. She gets involved with a real estate developer played by Damon Wayans Jr., and his character's kind of wasted. It's weird. They have this real romantic evening, and then they jump cut like about 4 months to, you know, they're involved and there's a big fight all of a sudden between them, and you're like, what happened? Is that all going to be in the DVD? You know, and he's just, his character doesn't have a lot to do in it. And I will give the filmmakers credit for, because a couple of the subplots don't quite go the way that you think they're going to go, so that's good. But the director, who was a German director named Christian Dieter, I think the major English release he's had before this was Love, Rosie. He has trouble with the pace. It just kind of meanders. They'll go with this person for a while and go with another person for a while. I think I mentioned in my review that Rebel Wilson is almost like Tina and Amy on the Golden Globes, or recently Ricky Gervais. They just disappear for a half hour or 40 minutes at a time, and I swear Rebel's out of the film for like at least 20 minutes.
But is it funny? So that's the bottom line. It's comedy, right?
Yeah. You've seen most of the funny stuff in the trailers, I think. Dakota Johnson's a very appealing actress. I mean, you know, she did her best with 50 Shades last year, but there wasn't much she could do with that. But she was one of the brighter parts of that film. As I was saying with Jake Lacey, she really needs a good solid script to showcase her talents. Rebel Wilson's fun. You know, she's sort of a younger version of a lot of the characters that Melissa McCarthy plays, but many times you're looking at some of her behavior and, constantly, blacking out drunk and waking up in strange bedrooms is kind of more dangerous than funny there. It's like, you shouldn't be emulating this behavior, really. But she actually has some good advice finally at the end of the film to Dakota Johnson's character. But like I say, it's not her film, and I think that's what they're selling it as.
That's how they were marketing it.
Yeah. So I, it wants to be Bridesmaids. It's certainly not. I think Rebel's character is probably too close to her Pitch Perfect character. But I really can't recommend it. You might watch a little bit of it if you're having to catch it on cable late one night, but it's not what it purports to be.
All right, so Jim is kind of up the middle on how to be single. Let's move along now. Let's move to Where to Invade Next. Where to Invade Next is Michael Moore in his new little propaganda documentary, which... This is going to be a little weird for me because I watched half of it. Jim lent me the screener a few months ago, and I watched about half. I think I dozed off. I gave you the screener back without watching the second half. It doesn't seem to be as much of a bomb thrower as some of Mr. Moore's previous films. It seems like he goes to these countries and sort of cherry picks something about that country to compare it to America unfavorably. It's like most Michael Moore films, you gotta approach it with a lot of skepticism and as well as common sense.
My mission? I will invade countries with names I can mostly pronounce. Take the things we need from them and bring it all back home. Because we have problems no army could solve.
I'm going to tell you from my own personal life, abstinence works.
Jim, did you care for Michael Moore's Where to Invade Next?
Well, it wasn't as strident as some of his more recent films. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he's actually putting down America. He's just trying to tell us that, hey, there are better ways to do things that work in other countries. Now, I observed that one of the countries he didn't go to was Greece.
Of course
and,
not.
But he does, if you saw the first half, you saw him in Italy talking to the couple that were talking about their month-long vacations. Mm-hmm. And you saw I'm trying to think of the car company. It wasn't Fiat, but yeah. It was one of the sports car companies where the employees get a two-hour lunch and they get month or five-week vacations.
And unemployment in Italy is very, very high. He doesn't mention that.
Yeah. So you didn't make it.
He's very careful about what he mentions.
And you probably saw the piece about the school system
in France. Yeah, how they serve so much better lunches. Well, great.
Well, you know, certainly we could do a lot better with the lunch system here. If you made it to the prison system.
I think maybe I was dozing off.
Denmark. And
I should have watched the rest of it. I shouldn't be reviewing a movie I haven't seen.
Well, Kate Marquis reviewed it for us and gave it 4 stars and highly recommends it. And she presents both sides in her review. So I really, check out her review if you get a chance.
Yeah. I think he's just wanting to get people into action, especially in that second half, which you didn't see. He talks about the college system, college tuitions, pretty much. And I'm trying to think of the country he went to in which the college is free, and actually Americans are going over to get a free college education. And he talks about the incredibly high cost of college in this country and how it's increased, and how when they tried to do that in these European countries, the students took to the streets and protest. And over here, we're not doing that. And he says, hey, get involved. You shouldn't put up with these 100% or 150% increases in your education. And I was like, well, that's good.
Okay. So Jim sort of liked Where to Invade Next. I only saw the first half, but I think Michael Moore needs to find some new ideas. Another movie we need to review, Zoolander 2. You guys loved it.
Oh, it's like nails on a chalkboard.
We loved when it was over.
He was once the world's most famous male model. Even his looks were household names. La Tigra, Magnum, and of course, Blue Steel. But that was a long, long, long time ago.
Old LeMay?
We can leave the theater.
Yeah, it's been 15 years since The Adventures of Derek Zoolander.
Yeah, who was screaming for a sequel?
I don't know. It has a following.
It has
definitely.
A big following on video and on cable and all that. Yeah, I understand there being a sequel to it. That's not one of those films where you go, what? What are they doing? Because that did have a big
Oh, people quote that movie all the time. I'm not surprised. I mean, it took 10 years to do an Anchorman sequel. Yeah, although the Anchorman sequel was better than the Zoolander 2 sequel. You guys really hated it. I had fun with it. Although I agree it should have been a lot funnier.
The cameos, and that's it.
But there were some jokes that worked. I thought it was funny when Hansel had his mask on, and I thought Zoolander's reaction when he took his mask off was quite funny. I thought the scene where he met his son for the first time at the orphanage was funny. But you're right. They spent so much money. I mean, there was motorcycle chases and explosions and this island prison and this underground lair and this loud action movie music.
Those guys were everywhere.
It looked like an expensive movie. Why didn't they take that money and invest in a funnier script?
Yeah.
Well, they had three guys work on this script, and I don't know if any more could have helped it. I mean, it's
somebody different, I guess. I don't know.
But boy, that was the most quiet I've experienced in that big Chesterfield Galaxy Theater. I mean, oh my goodness,
the cameos were so great.
But Sting, they didn't do anything funny.
Oh, but just seeing Sting,
it's nice to see him, but do something with it, you know.
But I think these characters, Zoolander and Hansler, are fun characters, and I sort of enjoyed spending time with them. I had some fun with the film, but you're right. It's not a very good comedy.
Oh, it's a megaton bomb.
It wasn't nearly as bad as, what's the one I mentioned, Hot Tub Time Machine 2, which I caught up on over the weekend on Hulu. I mean, that was a bad comedy.
Well, you know, the expectations are higher for this one than something like Hot Tub Time Machine, because this is Ben Stiller. I think...
Well, it's funnier than Hot Tub Time Machine.
Well, certainly. But I think, you know, Kate mentioned about Ben's direction, but, you know, he should try something else. But he's been, you know, directing movies for over 20 years now. You know, he's directed some pretty good ones. Tropic Thunder.
Cable Guy.
Yeah, Reality Bites, you know. So I don't know what happened.
Well, it seemed to be directed by committee. It was a noisy, loud special effects extravaganza. But I still thought a lot of it was funny. I thought Will Ferrell was funny when he had that muscular body that he tore off of himself.
Well, you saw that in the commercials.
Yeah, and what about when he was making the mask? Because I've spent all my time in prison making these perfect masks, and then he puts them on, and they look like that.
They could have done so much more with Kristen Wiig's character as well.
Yeah, just that she pronounces things funny and floats. That's about it, you know. Yeah. Well, it's just a lot of talented people just not underused in this.
All right. And what about John Malkovich when he was in prison for wearing the members-only jacket? You got to admit that was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, well... Yeah, that was
and
one
who
of
else was in
cameos.
There? MC Hammer, wasn't he in the fashion prison that was which was shaped
still
like a giant thimble, a thimble out in the middle of the ocean?
Oh yeah, it's one of those ones where it's barely worth the dollar rental at those little machines. Yeah.
Ben Stiller, he needs a strong script to make it fun. I mean, because look what he did with Tropic Thunder, like you mentioned.
All right, well, let's stop talking about this movie. You guys, Jim and Michelle didn't like Zoolander. I had some fun with it, but I wish it had been funnier. Let's move along then. What else do we get to read? Race. Race opens Friday. Jim has seen Race. Jim in the room has seen Race. That is the Jesse Owens story.
Who do we have here?
I'm Jesse Owens.
You're a natural. I don't trust naturals. I will say, you can run. Boy, oh boy, you can jump. What I want to know is, can you win?
Let's see what we got here.
Have a problem, coach?
No.
You want me to do it again?
Yeah.
Jim, how was Race?
It's pretty good. It's interesting. It's like the third Olympics-based film I've seen this year so far, so that's odd. Yeah, The Bronze comes out in March, and then Eddie the Eagle comes out the week after.
Which is fabulous.
Yeah, which is a lot of fun. Yeah. I think it's superior to this. This is a more serious film while Eddie is whimsical. Race is pretty much the story of Jesse Owens, the Olympian runner from the 1936 Olympics. When we first meet him, he's enrolling in the University of South Carolina, and we get to see him meeting his coach, who is played by Jason Sudeikis, his coach Larry Snyder. It's more of a serious role for Sudeikis.
Yeah, I wonder how he got that role. He couldn't have been the first choice.
Yeah, but he's pretty good in it. He's good.
Well, that's
you
good.
Know?
That's I'm glad he's good. I saw that and it seemed like odd casting. Who plays Hitler, by the way?
Oh, well, I don't know. Hitler is just kind of seen in the background he is in, you know, the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade or something. It's more focused on, this is one of the problems with the film. You would think from the commercials it was going to all be about the life of Jesse Owen, played by Stephen James, and Stephen's a very good young actor. I've not seen him in anything prior to this, but instead we get all the sort of political maneuvering of the U.S. Olympic Committee. There's a big fight between William Hurt Hertz character, who does not want the U.S. to go over to now Nazi Germany, while Jeremy Irons, who plays Avery Brundage, is all for it, and he ends up being the negotiator. And there's a lot of scenes with him meeting with the Nazi officials and them sort of hinting that, well, maybe your architectural firm could help us with the diplomatic building that we're going to build in Washington, D.C. So there's that subplot. There's also the subplot of Leni Riefenstahl making Triumph of the Will and dealing with Goebbels.
Who plays Leni Riefenstahl?
An actress named Carice Van Houten.
And, you know what? She was in that Paul Verhoeven movie, The Black...
The Black Book?
Yeah, The Black Book. She starred in that movie.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's a good actor.
But I think there's... it splits the time in between the stories, and it's there's no great follow-through on any of them. They're just trying to tempt too much, I think, with
it's,
this.
It's from director Stephen Hopkins, who did Predator 2, Blown Away, Lost in Space. He's been primarily a TV director.
Right. And there's some nice scenes utilizing CGI technology to recreate the stadium there in Germany where they're holding the Olympics. And there's another subplot where the officials there in Germany aren't going to want to have the Jewish American athletes perform or compete. Mm-hmm. And it's throwing in too much. It's a good looking film. It's not as gripping as you would like. Okay. And it is well done.
And who plays Eva Von Braun?
We don't see her in the film.
Okay. All right, so Jim, you're reviewing Race 4, WeAreMovieGeeks.com. You can look for Jim's review Thursday evening. How many stars are you going to give it, Jim?
I think I'm going to give it maybe 3.5 or 4. You know, it's a well-intended film.
And it's being released in February during Black History Month, and so appropriate.
Yeah, that's but true. Of course, all during it, I'm thinking of Blazing Saddles, the joke with Cleavon Little after he's discovered as a KKK man.
Yeah.
And he's like, for my next impression, Jesse Owen.
But did it have a Katy Perry cameo?
No.
Zoolander 2 did.
Yes.
All right, let's move along. The Witch opens Friday. Jim and I have seen The Witch. The Witch is a new horror film, low-budget horror film that takes place in the mid-17th century. It's about a Puritan family of six, mom and dad, and their four kids. The two youngest are twins who are about, maybe 4 or 5, and they're the boy.
Well, they are the creepiest twins,
Yeah, the older boy's about maybe 13, and the girl's about 15, and... they've been cast out of their commune for their religious beliefs, so they're kind of on their own. This is up in, I guess, near Massachusetts. It kind of takes place during the same time that the Salem witch trials took place.
Yeah,
it's a very interesting film, and it's a very scary film, I thought.
Boo! There you are.
They're sort of camped out by the edge of the woods, and there may be a coven of witches living in the woods, or maybe not. Some strange things start happening to them. There's an amazingly just chilling scene where the older girl is playing peekaboo with the baby. They just had a new baby, and she says, peekaboo, peekaboo, and then she uncovers her eyes, and the baby is gone in the blink of an eye. It is such a brilliant, scary scene. I'm surprised that gag hasn't even been done before. The movie is, it gets scarier and scarier. You don't know what's going on.
It's haunting, you know?
Is it the atmosphere?
It's sort of similar. Some of the scenes are similar to in The Revenant with that sort of dreary look to everything and just desolate.
Okay. And and some of the dialogue is actually taken from the transcripts of the Salem witch trials. So they speak in this old English with these sort of thick accents. So I had trouble understanding some of the dialogue,
too.
And it was kind of driving me nuts for a while. And then at some point I said, well, it really doesn't matter. This movie's really all about atmosphere and the fact that you don't know things. You think maybe you missed a plot point because you didn't understand it. It kind of worked in its favor in some odd
you're almost
way.
Like you're watching a silent movie or a foreign film without subtitles. You're just going on the body language and the inflection of the dialogue.
Yeah, but it's a great horror film. It totally got under my skin. And one thing I liked about it, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but I love the ending. ending because it went there. It just didn't leave you hanging. It there was a couple of fade outs earlier. I go, oh, it's gonna fade out here, and it's gonna leave a bunch of questions unanswered. But it doesn't do that. The final shot, which is a close up of one of the characters' faces, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Oh, the actress in it I have here is Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah,
and she's very good. I think we're gonna be seeing more of her.
Oh yeah,
I recall one of the reviewers remarking about how the poster is misleading. The poster is a young woman walking away from the camera with her back to the camera naked. And I was like, well, you know, that's in the film. And they're saying that it sexualizes the film. There's a lot of sexual stuff in this film. I think there's that's one reason that they thought the witch trials.
They're budding sexuality. Sure.
There's sexual panic among these characters. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of sequences early on where the 14-year-old boy is sort of gazing longingly at his older sister.
Yeah, kind of looking down her blouse.
The whole atmosphere, I can understand how some people are going to be frustrated with it because it's not a big gore fest.
No,
but
it's not going to do real well, I don't think.
So creepy. And, special mention should be made of having here Charlie the Goat as Black Phillip.
Yeah.
And this is one of the animals in the farm that they have. And it's pretty great.
And there's a rabbit, too. Possessed rabbit. It doesn't do anything, but he's still creepy.
It was one of the highlights of last year's Fantastic Fest, which Michael Hafner went to and reviewed, and he really thoroughly enjoyed
it.
Did we
reprint his review?
He is going to.
Oh, that's right.
It's opening. Friday, and we're also giving away at the site two actual movie tickets to this Thursday's 7:25 showing.
All right. So
for adventurous moviegoers,
exactly.
It's the movie to see.
It is. It's incredible. The Witch. We highly recommend
it. Is it
going
to be on your top 10?
Well, so far it is. I don't know. I can't tell. Don't ask me in February what's going to be in my top 10. But I'm pretty sure Zoolander 2 will be on my top 10.
There you go.
All right. What are we going to see this weekend? Tomorrow night we're seeing Risen. Risen stars Joseph Fine, and it's sort of a mystery based on Christ and his resurrection, but I don't know too much about it. I know it's produced by that studio that's done Oh God's Not Dead and some of these Christian films, which some of those movies tend to be a little bland and preachy, although the Christian audiences like bland and preachy movies.
But
I guess,
at least they're going to show it to us.
Yeah,
I'm happy
that's
about
weird.
That.
Tribune, pilot summons you.
The body has vanished.
His tomb is empty.
Where has he gone?
You tell me.
Already there, proclaiming him risen from death.
The Emperor cannot arrive to unrest. We must find a body.
Oh, no! Combed the city for bodies dead in the last week.
Take them up.
Everyone.
You know, it's directed by Kevin Reynolds, who really knows how to direct action films. Have you ever seen a movie he made in the 80s called The Beast?
Yep, Beast
about
of War.
A tank.
Yeah.
About
that's
a tank in Afghanistan. It's amazingly good.
Excellent.
And he also did Waterworld, which, you know, I know people don't like it, but it wasn't his
Waterworld.
Fault. That's actually a very well-directed action film. And Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And I haven't seen his name on a film in a while, so I'm sort of excited that he's
directing because
this.
He and Kevin Costner were working on Hatfields and McCoys, one of the best miniseries to come out a couple years ago. So, and he did that. Tristan and Isolde, 2006.
Yeah. With James Franco?
Okay.
All right, so I'll be reviewing Risen, and you can look for my review of Risen Thursday evening at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. And what's the one we're seeing with Katie Holmes?
Oh, Katie Holmes is Touched by Fire, or Touched with Fire, excuse me.
That's a drama, and that opens Friday as well.
And then Thursday I'm seeing one of the foreign film Oscar nominees, A War.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I was supposed to go to that, but I have to go see Zootopia instead. So, well, we'll see. But Dana Young reviewed Touched by Fire when it played at the St. Louis International Film Festival, so we'll be reposting Dana's review. But he gave it a very positive review.
Really liked it.
All right. What happened over the weekend awards-wise? We always have to talk about awards. When are we going to stop talking about awards? When the Oscars are over, we can stop talking about awards for a couple months.
Let's say there's nothing next week. It's the weekend after the Oscars.
That's like the weekend before the Super Bowl. You know, there's no games.
That's right.
What happened to the WGA? Let's talk about that.
The Writers Guild handed out their awards to Spotlight and The Big Short for adapted and original screenplay, which bodes well for both films with the Oscar race. The American Society of Cinematographers also handed out their award. third in a row to Emmanuel Lubieski. He won for The Revenant. That race is pretty much over. And also, the British Academy Awards were handed out Sunday evening last night. The awards were hosted for an 11th year by Stephen Fry and held at London's Royal Opera House. The British Academy Awards are also known as the BAFTAs. Yeah. The Revenant was named Best Film, with Iñárritu winning director, Leonardo DiCaprio receiving the award for leading actor. Once again, Emmanuel Lubieski won for cinematography, his fourth BAFTA overall and third win in a row, which that's he's making history. It's amazing. And the film also won for sound. One of this room's favorite, Mad Max Fury Road, also won four awards for its return to the big screen. Costume design, production design, makeup and hair, and editing. Yay. Let's see. Other 12 other BAFTA awards. Leading actress was presented to Brie Larson for her portrayal of young mother held captive in Room. The award for supporting actress went to Kate Winslet for her performance in Steve Jobs, which that's I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, she won the Golden Globe too, didn't she?
Yeah, but she didn't get SAG.
Right.
Huh.
Mark Rylance received the BAFTA for supporting actor for Bridge of Spies.
Really? Over Sly, huh? So
he wasn't even nominated.
Oh, yeah. Well, because he's not British. Yeah. He's the opposite of British.
The award for Outstanding British Film went to Brooklyn.
Yeah, British film.
And documentary went to Amy. The award for original music went to Ennio Morricone for his work on The Hateful Eight, marking the composer's sixth BAFTA in this category. Spotlight was successful in the original screenplay category, and the BAFTA for adapted screenplay went to The Big Short, pretty much like the WGA.
And pretty much what the Oscars will probably do.
I think so, too.
No, yeah, I still think Mad Max is going to sweep. Don't laugh at me.
You're the one.
Okay, I'm going to be laughing here in a couple weeks.
We'll get you to put some money on that next week.
Well, I'll call in Monday morning after the Oscars, and we'll see how that works.
You can call in and eat crow Monday morning when I'm proven right.
Yeah, Entertainment Weekly seems to think it's going to be Alicia Vikander and supporting, and I have a feeling it's going to be her.
Oh, that they got the prediction issue.
Yeah. They pretty much predict is what everyone else has been saying. But the only categories are up in the air: supporting actress and Best Picture, I guess. Mm.
They seem to think that Big Short
will get Best Picture, but they're not 100%
on it.
I think it's going to be
Spotlight. A friend of mine insists it's going to be The Revenant, so I think it's a three-way race, pretty much for Best Picture. Well, a friend of mine thinks it's going to be either, not Mad Max, but he thinks it's going to be either Revenant or Spotlight.
Oh, your friend. Okay. Well, gee whiz.
But no. You know, I say, well, The Revenant is one of the top ones up there.
Yeah. So a lot of the precursor awards have already been announced, and it's all over the place this year.
I'm going to be glad when the Oscars are over. What's going on in St. Louis?
Yeah, what's happening?
Let's see. Locally, they're screening The Man Who Fell to Earth. David Bowie died. We talked about that a couple weeks ago.
Nothing you have seen or heard about David Bowie will prepare you for the impact of his first dramatic performance in The Man Who Fell to Earth. This is another dimension of David Bowie, one of the few true originals of our time.
You're really a freak. I don't mean that unkindly. I like freaks.
Is this a weapon?
A weapon?
Well, it's too small for interplanetary travel.
You assume that it's a weapon. If I stay here, I shall die.
That probably is a really great showcase film. If you want to sort of enjoy the acting talents of David Bowie, Man Who Fell to Earth was made, in 75, I believe? 76, maybe?
Yeah.
David Bowie plays a guy who comes from another planet, and he's sort of wholesome and untouched, and then he sort of becomes this consumer freak. And
is that Nicholas Rogue directed that?
Nicholas Rogue directed that, Candy Clark, and Rip Torn. I saw it at the Webster a couple years ago. They did a Nicholas Rogue retrospective, so I've seen it recently. It holds up pretty well. To continue with the tribute to David Bowie, on March 2nd, as part of the Strange Brew film series, they're showing Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, which I've never seen. Is it like a concert movie, pretty much? I think it is. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. Maybe it's a concert movie with some other stuff, kind of like some of those Alice Cooper specials they had. In fact, I think it may have been made for TV.
Oh.
And movies for foodies, we're doing Labyrinth. David Bowie madness. Oh. Yeah, that'll be March 5th. We're going to show Labyrinth, and there are tickets still available. The tickets are selling pretty well.
Is that March 11th, you said, was it?
March 5th. It's a Saturday.
March 5th is a Saturday. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, this funny, Chef Liz over at Tenacious Eats Movies for Foodies has been wanting to show the Star Wars movies, and apparently the embargo lifts in August. So people are going to, because you couldn't show Star Wars for years at these things. You couldn't buy a license to show it for many years. And then she's been always been wanting to show it. So, and she says the licensing fees are 3 times what any other movie.
When you said, you know, that the people were like, I thought the price was keeping away, but there was just, weren't doing it.
They weren't selling licenses to show it. And apparently that expires in August. So she's going to show all three of the first Star Wars movies, chapters 4, 5, and 6.
You've got to have some blue milk.
I don't know what she's going to do. I mean, she's got plenty of time to think about it. Tickets are already selling, and it's like $100 a seat, but she'll sell out. All three of those will sell
really?
Out. Yeah. Oh, yeah, in a heartbeat. Everything's all her stuff sells out. Wow. We did Grand Budapest Hotel last night. Had a huge crowd for that. That was sold out.
Well, in the day, Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I know. Allied gave me a big box of stuff to give away. They gave me some train wreck condoms to give away. They did.
Yeah, hopefully they were put to good use there.
And some Hail Caesar t-shirts and some How to Be Single stuff. So that was fun. That was last night. What else is going on in St. Louis? I, of course, have started my new series at the Way Out Club. And I mentioned last week on March 1st, which is a Tuesday, I will be showing the 16mm print of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde starring Frederick March.
And Destroy the Brains, they've already posted a date for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me finish at the Way Out Club, double feature with Dillinger starring
Warren Oates.
Warren Oates is Dillinger and Ben Johnson and Richard Dreyfuss and Harry Dean Stanton's in there. It's a great movie with a great cast. But yeah, you're right. They are showing Videodrome is the return of Destroy the Brains, a late night grindhouse. And they have moved theaters. They have moved it from the High Point over to the Moolah.
Never been over there. I'll have to try them for that. Yeah.
I've been over there. It's kind of a weird theater. They have a lot of couches.
I heard.
And I always wonder how often they clean those couches. And people are going to be passing out on the couches at the midnight show. But they have a full bar there. And
yeah, I was going to say, they don't cut off. They have
the bar's open until 3. Yeah, the bar's open until 3 there. So it's actually a good venue for the late night grindhouse. So and Videodrome's a great movie. I saw that at the theater when it first came out. It's James Woods. It's a David Cronenberg film.
He has been exposed to Videodrome.
I've been hallucinating for a while, ever since...
What?
Since I first saw Videodrome.
His brain is already receiving video images. I think that massive doses of Videodrome signal will ultimately produce and control hallucination. To the point that it will change human reality.
He hasn't shown a Cronenberg film since The Brood, and that's been 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, Debbie Harry's in that,
Debbie Harry, and she gets topless and puts pins through her nipples, and it's pretty crazy. And James Wood reaches into his stomach and pulls a gun out of his intestines, and it's crazy.
It's trippy.
It is. I have the Criterion Blue. So there's always good stuff going around in St. Louis. Let's see, what else can we talk about? How about Burt Reynolds? Burt Reynolds turned 80.
The big 80 for Burt.
Yeah, Burt's an octogenarian. When we were on Camo X last year, Paul Cook asked us what celebrity we'd each like to meet, and Jim said Mel Brooks, and I believe Michelle said, who'd you say, Sigourney Weaver? And I said Burt Reynolds, because he's one of my top 10 favorite actors of all time. There's something comforting about Burt Reynolds. Always reminds me of going to movies with my dad back in the 70s, because my dad always liked Burt. And he did do a couple of those... Wizard Worlds last year. He did one in Philly and he did one in Chicago. I kind of wish I had gone up to Chicago and met him.
Little chance he's going to do the one here. I know they're starting to... They've released the names of a couple of people.
Yeah, Lou Ferrigno. Oh, boy.
Well, one of the actress, Hinstrich from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to be there and a couple of Doctor Who people.
Nastasia Hinstrich?
No, not Nastasia. No.
There's another actress from Hinstrich. Is she related to Nastasia?
I don't think so. I thought so.
Oh, okay. I think she's British, though. Hinstrich. So, plays one of the scientists on S.H.I.E.L.D. But back to Burt.
To Burt. You know, we did top 10 Burt Reynolds movies. Actually, it's an article we wrote a couple of years ago when I did Super 8 Burt Reynolds Movie Madness, but I sort of reformatted it and we reposted it for his 80th birthday. And Michelle was a little upset that we didn't have Smokey and the Bandit as number one. And in retrospect, we shouldn't have had Boogie Nights and Deliverance as one and two, because those aren't really Burt Reynolds movies. Those are more of him being part of an ensemble cast. When I did the top 10 Charles Bronson movies, I purposely left off The Great Escape and The Magnificent Seven and The Dirty Dozen for that reason. I thought, well, those aren't Charles Bronson movies, and the Boogie Nights and Deliverance aren't really Burt Reynolds showcase type movies. I think my favorite Burt Reynolds movie is White Lightning, as far as Burt Reynolds.
That's a great one.
That is a great one. I saw that many times when it came out in 1972. But Burt Reynolds had an amazing career. He sort of had a similar career to Clint Eastwood in that he started out on television. Well, actually started out playing football in college. And then he was on Gunsmoke for a couple of seasons. He was on Riverboat.
Yeah. Playing a character on Gunsmoke named Quentin, which I guess inspired Tarantino's mother.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's where Quentin got his name. Yeah,
his father was the police chief of Jupiter, Florida Police Department.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And he kind of had a second career. Like, a next generation got to know him when he, you know, with Boogie Nights, with the Russell Crowe movie, Mystery Alaska.
Yeah, Mystery
which
Alaska.
Which I really I love that movie. It's just like this little gem of a film.
But he went to Europe in 1966 and starred in a spaghetti western, just like Clint Eastwood did. That's how Clint Eastwood's career kicked off. He was working on Rawhide and during one of the summer hiatuses, he went over and filmed Fistful of Dollars, not thinking it was like a nothing movie, and it turned out to make his movie career. Burt Reynolds sort of did the same thing. He did a Sergio Corbucci movie called Navajo Joe with a great Morricone score. In fact, that Morricone score has been reused in a lot of films. Tarantino's used it a couple of times, and it was even used in Election.
Navajo Joe.
Yeah, Navajo Joe, Navajo Joe.
Dude, yeah,
I'll drop that sound clip into this podcast.
Navajo Joe, Navajo Joe.
That's a pretty great one.
So that showed, you know, he had a lot of charisma in that film, and he came back. Did another spaghetti western called 100 Rifles, which was really good also, with Raquel Welch. And then he made a few other things like Sam Whiskey and sort of some comedic westerns in the late 60s.
But he was still kind of playing in TV with cop shows and Hawk. The show that I loved as a kid, Dan August.
That's right.
Where the big appeal of it to me was that he was doing most of his own stunts in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he had his hand bandaged up for about two or three episodes after one stunt went badly.
Yeah.
And I think that helped get him on the talk shows, especially The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, where those two guys just had an incredible rapport. And I think that's kind of what propelled him back into movies and into his superstar time.
But it was really Deliverance where he really showed his range, because he's fantastic in Deliverance.
You take this man down out of the mountains and turn him over to the sheriff, there's going to be a trial, all right. Trial by jury.
So what?
We killed a man, Drew. Shot him in the back. A mountain man. Cracker. Gives us something to consider.
All right. Consider. We'll listen.
Shit, all these people are related. But goddamned if I want to come back up here and stand trial with this man's aunt and his uncle. Maybe his mama and his daddy sitting in the jury box. What do you think, Bobby?
Oh. Sort of playing, you know, the brawn of this quartet of men who are all sort of different and all have their own stories to tell. And Burt Reynolds just fantastic. That's one movie that made him a big superstar.
Was that his? I think I was reading that it was his idea to take the sleeves off that.
Oh yeah,
that leather. Well, it was like a skin diving, you know, top. And so he just had the vest there exposing his arms. Great.
Yeah.
Great look.
Yeah, I love Deliverance. And then he started starring in movies like Fuzz was a movie which I watched last year where he reteamed with Raquel Welch. Apparently those two hated each other so much they refused to be on the set with each other. And I read that when they're interacting in that movie, they actually brought in a stand-in. So you see the stand-in from the back when Raquel Welch is delivering her lines to Burt Reynolds and vice versa. They brought in a stand-in for Raquel Welch because those two couldn't stand each other. Although many years later, this is interesting, Raquel Welch was suing the makers of Cannery Row because she got fired and replaced with Deborah Winger.
Mm-hmm.
And Burt Reynolds showed up at that trial and testified on behalf of Raquel Welch and said she was nothing but a professional, even though they had their own personal differences. So good for Burt. He's a sport. Seamus was one with an incredibly great stunt. You talked about him doing his own stunts. There's a scene in Seamus where he jumps. He's in a park and he jumps off this overpass onto this tree. That's pretty remarkable. A man who loved Cat Dancing. And then that brings up the White Lightning, which I think is my favorite of all his showcase films.
Yeah, now that was the one that was before Gator.
Gator McCluskey. And then that's the one where Ned Beatty is the sheriff, and Gator is a moonshiner, and Ned Beatty. It opens with Ned Beatty murdering Gator's brother, and it's kind of a revenge film. Really, really good. The Longest Yard, of course, that was a huge hit. I mean, Burt was huge in the 70s.
Yeah,
I mean, even in the mid 70s, before Smokey and the Bandit. I mean, the guy was At Long Last Love. That was a movie I've never seen. That was a Peter Bogdanovich disaster.
That's a rough one.
I think they sort of hidden that movie. movie. I don't think that movie's easy to see.
Well, he had some stumbles. He was trying. He was, you know, not wanting to be pigeonholed as the action star. He wanted to do more sophisticated stuff. One of my favorites of his is what's the movie he did with Jill Clayburgh?
Starting over.
Okay.
Yeah. You're right.
It had a James Brooks script, I think.
Yeah.
But that's a really strong film.
And Hustle is another one of his more serious films he did. That was Robert Aldrich directed that with Catherine Deneuve.
Yeah.
That's kind of a good one. And so he was in Silent Movie, of course.
Yeah, great cameo in that. And then he got into directing, and I know that he directed Gator, right?
That was his first film as a director. But it was really a Smokey and the Bandit. It was such a massive hit. It was the same year as Star Wars, and Star Wars, of course, was number one that year. But right on its heels, number two, well, maybe not on its heels, I don't know, but it was Smokey and the Bandit.
With a truckload of bootleg beer.
I'll be driving this one. Hey, Blocker, you be driving the truck. This is Bandit 1, and that is Bandit 2.
Now, who would do a thing like that?
You're crazy, you know that?
Yeah, you know that.
Yes.
That really changed. And after that, he teamed up with Hal Needham, and he became a little jokier. He was sort of laughing through his films.
Cannonball Run.
Yeah, he made a whole string of these things.
I love Hooper. I've got a soft spot for that one.
I do too. So these films, they didn't really challenge him in terms of range as an actor, but boy, they made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then when he was directing again, one of my favorites of his is Sharky's People.
Oh, Sharky's Machine. Sharky's Machine. That's a really terrific movie. Rachel Ward.
Yeah,
it's sort of a reworking of Laura a little bit, in that it's a detective investigating a woman who's been murdered, and then she shows up, and then they fall in love, and that's got a great... Yeah. Henry Silva is the villain in that.
Bert was on the short list to play Superman also in 78, as most of Hollywood was.
I think Bronson was too. So that, but Bert Reynolds, we're talking about him.
Look at all the women either he dated or married. Yeah. It was all,
I think he's only married once to Judy Carn.
Lonnie Anderson.
Was he married to Lonnie Anderson? He had Sally Field and Dinah Shore.
That's
she was
the
a lot
one
older
that,
than him, I imagine.
Yeah, he lovingly referred, anytime he speaks about Dinah Shore, that one.
Very
special.
Close to his heart.
It's a very special, can tell.
Yeah.
He really was in love with her.
Yeah. He teamed up with Clint Eastwood for a movie called City Heat that Richard Benjamin directed, but that's really lousy.
Yeah.
In fact, I watched about 15 Burt Reynolds movies last year. I went on this kick where I just couldn't get enough Burt, so I tracked down a lot of these movies that I hadn't seen in decades and decades and rewatched some of them, and I had a really good time revisiting the career of Burt Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
But his career kind of came to a skid a bit, I would say, right around Sharky's Machine. After that, he didn't really do anything for a couple of days. I mean, he did a lot of TV work.
Well, he had some health problems, I recall, coming from a stunt, I guess, on
City Heat.
He
hurt his back or something.
His jaw, too.
And he got addicted to painkillers. Mm-hmm. His career was kind of going nowhere. In fact, I think, didn't he declare bankruptcy at some point?
He had some
stumbles.
So was Striptease the start of his...
Comeback?
Yeah,
Striptease with Demi Moore.
And that led to Boogie Nights.
Yeah, I'm Boogie Nights.
Darling, I'd like you to meet Jack Horner, the finest director in the business.
Hi. Do you have any Coke at this party?
Oh, gosh, I'm sure they can find some somewhere.
Right.
No bigger than a minute, are you?
Uh-huh.
Shy as a butterfly. Out there.
Got his Oscar nomination. He was beaten by Robin Williams for
Good Will Hunting
for that Oscar. I thought Bert should have got that Oscar. Doggone it. He was Jack Horner, wasn't that his name?
Great part.
And he's unfortunately still having money problems because it was like late last year. I went to the auction site. He was auctioning off a lot of his things, which was sad.
A Trans Am, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
I guess that's why he's doing Wizard World.
He's still hanging tough in there. He was very funny last season, voicing himself on the FX animated show Archer.
I caught that down.
That's very interesting.
It's very good.
Well, our top 10 list for top 10 Burt Reynolds movies went number 10, Hustle, number 9, Seamus, number 8, Cannonball Run, number 7, The Man Who Loved Women, number 6, Smokey and the Bandit, Sharky's Machine, The Longest Yard, number 3 was White Lightning, and then Deliverance and Boogie Nights. And I put Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex with Woody Allen movie where he played a sperm. was an honorable mention. The Man Who Loved Cat, Dancing with Sarah Miles, was an honorable mention. Stick was a movie made a little bit later in his career that was made based on an Elmore Leonard novel, but it's a hard movie. That's a hard movie to try.
Breaking In is very good too, where he's playing aging burglar.
Yeah,
very
Casey good. Zemesco, I believe, was his co-star.
Yeah,
in that.
Yeah, very good.
All right, so happy birthday to Mr. Burt Reynolds, who turned 80 the other day. All right, well, we're going to have to wrap it up, I guess. We're going to be back next week with more reviews of Risen, and that may be the only new movie we're reviewing, but I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about, because we always do here at We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Betts.
And listen again next week.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather.
Oh, naughty state. Hello, Don. Hey, hey, hey.
Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock.